Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. American Family Radio, I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano. As always, we thank you for listening to this program, and we thank you for listening to American Family Radio. Ed, good morning to you.
Good morning.
You want to hit us up with a preview here?
Absolutely. In just a few minutes, we're going to have Dan Anderson on. He's a longtime educator in the public school system, but he has written a book with his daughter, who's also a high school teacher. He's going to talk about the 10 myths of teen dating. And all I say is, thank you, Jesus, that I am no longer involved in that.
Right. You know, okay.
So anyway, that'll be very interesting.
Some parents want to know. We'll find this helpful.
Then we're going to have Fred Jackson on bottom of the hour. We're going to be talking about top headlines. And then
what's going on in Charlotte?
We're
going to talk about that with Fred, too.
Next hour, Eric Ballard, who's going to talk about the making of a godly man. You'll be interested in this guy. He's a graduate of Mississippi State University, so he's a cowbell fan.
That's half godly right there alone.
Huh? Get you halfway there?
More cowbell, that's my alma mater. Thus the opinion I have there. A lot to talk about on the program today, and we hope that you'll stay around with us. You know, it's always a risk for us to preview the show for you because you may decide, I don't want to hear that stuff, and turn to another channel.
Right.
Or listen to another radio station. Maybe we should just not tell you who's coming up on the program.
Trick them into listening.
And leave you, wanting to know. And what do you call that exactly? You call that leading people on, or you call it teasing? Or
manipulation.
People would want to listen to Today's Issues for the great unknown. Maybe, I don't know. But, a lot to talk about today. You know, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are basically tied in all the polls. And, in fact, Donald Trump is leading her in some places. Now, this could change tomorrow, people.
Right.
We understand that. But now the polls have been trending in Donald Trump's favor for about 10 days now, Ed.
Yeah, and it's actually pretty surprising. I mean, after the Democratic National Convention, and this is typical, we've mentioned this on the program, it's typical for the candidate of either party to get a bounce. It's called the post-convention bounce. People are tuned in. A lot of them are listening. Some of them are listening to a candidate for the first time during a campaign season.
Football season hadn't started yet.
Football season hadn't started yet.
People are sort of thinking about politics a little bit.
A little bit more. And so Hillary Clinton, of course, the Democrats had their convention second, and so she got a really good bounce out of the convention, and we've talked about it. It lasted three, maybe 4 weeks.
Right.
Their convention was in July, and then here in September, Trump has steadily gained ground, and in most polls has either narrowed the gap significantly, caught Hillary Clinton, or even in some polls, passed her. So I think this is a surprise. In fact,
Democrats are worried.
They are worried. And I saw the Washington Post had a story up. Hillary Clinton was being interviewed. I forget where she was being interviewed. And she sounded, I got to say, she sounded a little shrill. Did you see that video?
I did. It was an interview. I don't know where you can go online to see this, but it's her. I know the Washington Post website had it on.
I think that's where I saw it. It was on the Washington Post, but it was a television interview. I'm not sure who was interviewing her.
Speaking. Was it an interview or was it her talking to an audience via a video connection?
Okay, anyway. You're right. This is it was during an address via video conference to a gathering in Las Vegas of the Laborers International Union of North America. So it was a video conference.
Okay,
she was speaking to a camera.
She's conferenced in to talk to a large group of people in a convention hall somewhere where? Las Vegas or something?
It was in Las Vegas.
Okay, and it's who? What group is it?
The Laborers International Union of North America. It's a very powerful union, especially
in... Is that a labor union then?
Or, yes.
Okay.
And they're very important in Nevada, I mean, in terms of getting out the vote.
Okay, so, but in her... what Ed and I are talking about, really not so much as her content of her a talk she gave, which I don't know, lasted, what, 10 minutes or so?
Yeah, I watched 5 or 6 minutes of it, I think.
She is, it's Hillary Clinton talking to a camera. She can't see the people, I don't think, about labor, I guess, labor issues. And
it was.
Man, she looks angry. She's almost... yelling?
It sounded like she was shouting, very shrill, and she asked the question that she should not have asked. This is going to be run in opposition ads. She said, having said all this, I'm quoting her now, having said all this, why aren't I 50 points ahead, you might ask? And then she goes on to explain how she needs people's help. But you don't want to raise that question with people because people are going to be going, well, why aren't you 50 points ahead?
Right,
there's a reason for it.
Right.
And they begin to think why. People are going to answer the question for her, and you don't want to do that. You want to project confidence. And none of that was projected in that video. I was surprised by it. She's normally pretty controlled, self-controlled as a candidate.
It's one of those videos where you watch it, and in fact, I was watching it with somebody this morning, and I was going, man, I've never seen her this angry this long in a public setting.
Right.
I mean, she's like angry, ticked off, talking at the people. And, of course, she's trying to get their votes and their support, and that's a natural constituency for a Democratic candidate. So it doesn't surprise me that she's doing this kind of bit. But she doesn't need to do this anymore. Her team would have told her, had it been a videotape, you're going to have to do that one over.
Right. We need to.
Because
that's exactly
that
right.
That is not.
I thought it was fake. When I first started watching, I was looking for the voice to be out of sync with the lips.
So somebody put this together for a joke.
Yes, that's what I really did until I realized, no, wait a second. I started reading the story. Her lips are synced with her voice. And then when she asked, why aren't I 50 points ahead, I thought, wow, you do not want to raise that question. Doesn't matter what you answer, everyone else is going to be thinking the same thing. Well, why aren't you? And maybe it's because of Benghazi. Maybe it's because of health issues. Maybe it's because of your email scandal. You don't want people's minds going there.
Right.
It was a poor move. You're exactly right. If this had been a taped speech that's going to be delivered somewhere, her handlers would have said, no, we're going to do that over again. Lower your voice. Smile.
Right.
Smile a little bit. Act confident.
Okay, if it's on Drudge, if you get the Drudge report, you can probably find it at the Washington Post, but they're probably trying to bury it by now. But it says Hillary turns manic in new video. And you can watch it for yourself.
I was really surprised by it because she is now she's not a great speech giver. I think that's been a
she's usually composed.
But she's usually composed, and she's usually she's I would say here the last month she's begun to disintegrate as a candidate.
Right.
You know, her health doesn't seem to be good. She's canceled a couple of appearances. She does not look confident. She looks haggard.
I got a theory.
Okay.
I think she quit taking her medicine, and Donald Trump started taking his. And so,
Well,
so he's become calmer.
Oh, yeah, because he has.
And she's amped up.
Yeah.
So I think they've role reversed here in the last.
That's funny and interesting because he has calmed down. Donald
he has
Trump.
Calmed down. Donald.
He has.
And his numbers have gone up.
He's making speeches, apparently, from the teleprompter.
Yes.
So there's less, kind of like your advice. I don't know if his handlers and his kids have taken away his phone so he can't tweet after 9 o'clock.
Dad, hand me the phone. Okay, we'll get you a banana split. That's what you want, but you're not doing any more tweeting after 9 o'clock.
Come on, watch some baseball. There's some good pennant races going on.
Donald Trump is a teetotaler. Did you know that?
I did know that. I've heard that.
He is.
He doesn't.
In fact, he said, I taught my kids stay away from alcohol.
Yeah, because you got to keep a clear mind.
Right.
If you're going to be dealing in multiple hundreds of millions of dollars in building projects, you do not want to make decisions while you're under the influence.
But in all seriousness, Donald Trump has been had a pretty steady campaign and message. He hasn't gone off message or gone on, gotten in one of his public fights or anything that he gets into trouble for. He hasn't done that in a while, and so he seems to have disciplined himself and listening to people on the campaign trail. I mean, inside his campaign as he goes out on the campaign trail. Now, he's still Donald Trump. You're still going to get you're still going to get that side of him, but he has been much more disciplined. Some would call it much more, quote, presidential in his presentation and his talks, and he's appealing to the broad middle out there, but he's also trying to solidify a conservative base to energize him and support him. So I think you got to grade him out pretty good.
He's had a good month. Hillary Clinton has had a bad month. Now, the debate, we'll be talking with Fred about the debate coming up on Monday, but that's going to be huge. It's going to be huge.
Yeah, where are they having that? You know,
I wish you hadn't asked me. Fred will know. I'll try to remember to look it up here. And it's going to be covered, I think, by all the major networks. So there must
and
be
WWF.
And WWF. I'd buy a ticket to WWF, it. I'd do pay per view for that.
Ladies and gentlemen, in this corner,
in the blue trunks.
Right. We're not going to say how much she weighs. Because we don't do that with women.
That's right.
Now, Mr. Trump over here.
Even though we're all about equality.
Mr. Trump over here. He goes anywhere from 250 to 270, but he's 6'2". Come on, people.
Yeah.
All right. So that's where we are with the presidential. May talk about that a little bit more, but a lot of people are surprised that Donald Trump has caught her in the polls, and it's making the Democrats nervous because she is supposed to be way ahead right now.
Right.
That's the conventional wisdom. But the conventional wisdom about Donald Trump has been for a year and a half that he can never make it.
Yes. And for a while it looked that way.
Right. Well, during the Republican primaries, people were going
constantly.
A lot of people were going, well, he'll fade.
He said that. He's done.
He's done. He'll implode.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying that he may be like a cat.
Nine lives.
He has nine lives.
Okay, in answer to your question.
What question was that?
Jade McIntosh, about where the debate is. Jade McIntosh, our producer, says location is Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York.
Is that the New York area, New York City area?
I don't know where Hofstra is. I know that when I was on the debate team at Boston College, Hofstra.
You went to
Hofstra was awesome. They always had an excellent debate.
Well known for that. Well, that's interesting. So they're well known for that, and that's where the presidential debate.
Yeah, there you go.
Will be. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Our email address is comments@afr, and our website is afr.net. Go to our website afr.net. Our first guest is.
Yes, I want to welcome Dan Anderson, a longtime educator in the public school system, who, along with his daughter Jacqueline, who's also a high school teacher, co-authored the book, The 10 Myths of Teen Dating. We want to welcome Dan to Today's Issues. Dan, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tim and Ed. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, we like to... Excuse me. I'm so sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, good to have you with us, brother. I'm Tim with Ed. You want us to call you Dan or Daniel?
You can call me Daniel, and I just want to promise I'm not going to be as shrill as either Hillary or Donald.
Okay, that's good.
Always a good starting place, isn't it?
Yes,
amen.
It is.
Amen. Well, we wanted to have you on basically because Ed and I are done with this issue. So we're, whatever you say, we did it right. Okay.
Okay. We won't ask your daughter.
But yes. we're here to help others who are in that.
I will say this: my favorite joke that I've ever heard, Daniel, about raising a teenage daughter, and I certainly hope Jacqueline was completely different. But best line I ever heard was, being in the same house with a teenage girl is being like locked in the trunk of a car with a Wolverine. So I don't know if that was your experience or not. Was it?
No, Jackie was a little tamer than that. But I'll tell you that being a public school teacher for 24 years, sometimes it's like being locked in the room with 25 Wolverines.
25 Wolverines.
Are you still teaching, or have you retired?
Yes, I am. I just started my 25th year.
Good for you.
About 2 weeks ago.
So full retirement benefits after this year?
No, probably 30, but I love what I do.
So okay, brother.
I'm going out feet first, I think, on this job.
Feet first. And you are in Portland, Oregon, so you are you've taught that time up there in that neck of the woods.
Well, tell us about your book, The 10 Myths of Teen Dating. Why did you write this?
Well, I wrote this book, excuse me, because I've been teaching kind of these ideas about the myths of dating for many, many years. And when my oldest daughter got into dating years, I think I forgot everything I knew. And what I did is what a lot of Christian parents did. I just said no to everything. And that's not a great approach. And what that did, it kind of pushed my daughter and her ideas about dating and what eventually was a dating life right underground. So I needed to get the message out to parents that there's a better way to do things.
Well, is that what you consider the biggest mistake that you made? Was saying no to everything,
Yeah, I think it was. You know, I mean, Christian parents, especially dads, you know, teen boys are the enemy, and we want them as far away from our daughters as we can get them. But if our daughters aren't bought into our kind of mindset, you're not in union. And so what you end up doing is trying to control instead of teach and help her to understand kind of where you're coming from and help her get her head around what dating's going to look like for her. We force our children into a box, and that's not helpful.
You know, Daniel, I'm going to make a confession here. Been in the pastorate for many years, over 30 years. And when I was a youth pastor, which I loved doing, but I can remember parents coming into my office and what are we going to do with our son or our daughter? And, of course, at that point, my kids were young. And so I had all this really great, you know, theoretical and, you know, slash biblical, you know, counsel to give to them. And then when my daughter turned 13, my son was very, very easy. My daughter was a little bit more of a challenge, although she's a great gal. But and she's 32 now. But when she turned 13, we started having some trouble. I looked at my wife and I said, I don't know anything. I mean, I thought I knew all this and had given plenty of advice, but it really is a different thing when it goes from being theoretical to this is my life, and I've got a real person here that I need to learn from God how to disciple, right?
Yeah, and I think as Christians, we rightly go Bible first, but I think sometimes Christian families go Bible only. And if the Bible were enough, we'd all be perfect. We'd go to church, we'd listen to sermons, we'd walk out, and we wouldn't sin for a week, and we'd reload the next Sunday. And our daughters and our sons, when it comes to dating, they need more information than just the Bible. The Bible was first century Near East. They never heard, they didn't talk about dating. So you need some points of discussion. You need some scientific research to help your daughters kind of understand here are behaviors that aren't going to be helpful for you. So I think what we tried to do is write a book that essentially is a companion to the Bible, and it gives parents more information and more ways to talk to their daughters about dating rather than trying to club them over the head with the Bible.
So the title of the book, and again, you wrote this with your daughter, Jacqueline. By the way, folks, if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Daniel Anderson. He's a longtime educator in the public school system, and he, along with his daughter, Jacqueline, wrote the book we're discussing, The 10 Myths of Teen Dating. So, Daniel, give us a couple of those myths.
Sure, yeah. And so there's 10, and they're basically kind of mirror the stages of a relationship. And the first myth is, if I had a boyfriend, I'd be happy. And that's followed up by trusting your feelings, which is basically dogmatic thinking among teenagers and teenage girls today that their feelings are infallible. Dating myth number three is you're in love, and then from there they just go right through all the stages of a relationship, all the way to the end stage, where young people think if they have lots of serious relationships and if they live with somebody, that's going to help them stay married.
Well, you know, those have some application in a broader way, too. I mean, that second one especially, that your feelings are infallible. It seems like so many people, even maybe most Christians, they go by their feelings. And in fact, I've, you know, had people tell me, well, I feel like this is what God is telling me. And it's obvious they're relying upon.
I just need to get married for the fourth time. I really feel like the Lord's leading me in that direction.
They're relying on what they feel and assuming that that's God speaking to them. Right, Daniel?
Yeah. And that's, you know, sadly, you know, the divorce rates for evangelical Christians are almost identical to the secular world. So clearly, the Christian's approach to marriage isn't entirely successful. And I think you're right. I think that people, they trust their feelings too much and lead them astray. You know, I know there's research that says that marital couples who rate themselves as unhappy, like 60% of the time within 5 years will say that they're happy.
Yeah.
And so feelings are temporary, and you always have to kind of gauge them against the reality that's going on around you. And teenage girls are not very good at that. They tend to go lead feelings first and then kind of think later. And that's everybody, but teenage girls particularly.
Who will this book help, Daniel?
So I think it's got three or four different audiences. I think first and foremost, it's going to help parents. Every chapter has really great, interesting research that they can share with their children. And every chapter has discussion starters. So I think it's going to help dads particularly to sit down with daughters and go, here's some things that I'd like to talk about, and here's some questions. I think it's going to help pastors. Many of my students have read this book, and I think it's going to help teenagers. You know, Jackie's probably working on a book for teenage girls in the follow-up, but I think those are the three groups, is really parents, pastors, and young people.
So do you believe in dating?
I believe in dating with some limits and some boundaries. You know, I know what I don't believe, and I don't believe in telling your daughter no, because that just doesn't work. Just a couple of months ago, I was meeting with a young woman, and she was telling me the story of her pastoral father who forbid her from dating. And she's like, I've had a boyfriend for a year. And so we can't tell them no. We have to communicate with them and help them understand what dating needs to look like. Now, they need wisdom and guidance.
Oh, you mean don't tell them no to dating?
I don't think you can. I mean, if it's their choice, I think you can tell a daughter, you know, I'm on board with you.
You just put rules. You just put rules and boundaries in place.
I think so. You really need to have some discussion.
Yeah, I don't know any
time you're gonna.
I don't know anybody that maybe there are people out there who forbid dating. Period.
Oh, there's plenty. I was a youth pastor too for a couple of years, and I can tell you story after story after story, and my own self included, who just basically said, "No, you can't date until you're 18, and then we'll start figuring it out." But that's not healthy.
Well, I'll say this, and my daughter doesn't mind because I've told this before. We told her she couldn't date till she was 16, and then when she was 16 and started going out with this boy, they were going out to dinner somewhere, and I said, "Well, what's the occasion?" She said, "Our 6-month anniversary," and this was like 2 months after she was turned 16. So yeah, I could see the look on her face; she realized what she'd done, and I said, your 6-month anniversary. You started dating. You were supposed to start dating 2 months ago. So, like you said, they find a way to talk or go together. They may not call it dating, but anyway.
Boy meets girl. It's been going on a while, by the way.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah. The 10 Myths About Teen Dating by our guest, Daniel Anderson. And you can get that where books are sold on the internet or. In the bookstore.
Yeah, Amazon.com, ChristianBooks.com. And if any of your listeners want to reach out to me on my Gmail account, I'll drop a couple free books in the mail for the first couple of three that gets me. It's the number 10, mythsofdating@gmail.com. So 10, mythsofteendating@gmail.com, and I'll send a couple books out for free.
Myths of Teen Dating.
10 myths, Jeff.
The 10 myths. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
King of the Wild Frontier.
The music's free. I know we call it Learning University.
Of necessity.
Trivia Friday.
True.
Ding, ding, ding,
yes.
ding, ding.
Oh, really?
That's correct. Giraffes do not have vocal cords.
So you want a cheeseburger without cheese?
Hold the cheese.
I said, yes, ma'am, whatever you call it.
Take a break with Tim Wildman and the gang. Friday mornings at 10 Central on American Family Radio.
On the first day of our tour of Israel, we will stand on the Mount of Olives and look out over the old city of Jerusalem. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. March 9 through 17, we'll be going to Israel, the Holy Land. This is 2017, of course. We'll be flying from New York City, JFK Airport, direct to Tel Aviv, and then we'll begin our 9-day tour of Israel, including Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Jericho, Tiberias, Nazareth, the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, and all the places you've read about since you were a child in the Bible. For more information on this tour, you can order a brochure by calling us at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5. Also, you can visit the website twholyland.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next. Charlotte, North Carolina is under a state of emergency after another night of violence. An angry mob prowled the streets last night, brutally attacking police, civilians, and news reporters like animals hunting prey. They literally tried to stuff an unconscious photographer into a burning trash can. The reports are on my website, toddstearns.com. North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory called in state troopers and the National Guard, but it's unclear if even that will quell the mob's bloodlust. To be clear, these are not protesters. These are anarchists, governed by rules for radicals. We've seen this type of unrest in cities across the nation, advancing a false narrative that police are targeting African Americans. They say they want justice. Well, if justice means looting Walmart and shutting down roadways and beating up hotel clerks, they've got their justice. I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. American Family Radio. Hey, you may, there's a couple things to note here about listening to American Family Radio. You can go on our website, afr.net, and you can print off all our stations so that when you travel, you can tune in to American Family Radio wherever we have a radio station, and we're on, you know, we're on, I don't know, 38 states, inside 38 states, not all. We don't cover every state from border to border, but I'm just saying we have a lot of stations, and you can go to American Family Radio website, go to our station listing, and print off our radio station so you can know where to tune in to AFR. Also, a lot of people, thousands of people, in fact, listen to us via the app. So we have an app. It's free to download. It takes about 60 seconds, and you can it's an app that goes on your cell phone or your iPad or your other electronic device, electronic mobile device, and you can get American Family Radio that way. I have personally led people to this app, and and they have surrendered their listening habits to it, and especially people 60, 65, 70,
You had to help them.
I've got several people. They go, well, I don't get your radio station where I live now or something. And I have to say, well, can you download the app and listen that way? And they tilt their head like the dog. Yeah, a lot of them. But if you tell them, you explain it to them for about a minute or two, most of them get it.
Yeah.
And that we have a lot of listeners who can access American Family Radio via the app, and it's clear as a bell. It's like you have a radio station in your town. Except it's on your iPhone or your other kind of smartphone. So there you go. The American Family Radio app takes about 60 seconds probably to download, And then you can listen to us anywhere in the world.
And we do make mention of the fact, some of these folks, if they, you know, I know they're maybe older, they don't know how to do this, get a young person in there. If you have a computer at home, you can listen
right
all day long,
yes,
every day on your computer. And then when you go, you travel or something, you can take us along on with your app.
You're listening to the radio program, Today's Issues on American Family Radio. I'm Ed. I'm Tim with Ed, and Fred is... That's not easy to say, folks.
No, it isn't.
Live radio.
We believe only in one-syllable
right.
names
Fred Jackson.
On our radio network.
Fred Jackson is with us. He's news director for American Family Radio and OneNewsNow.com. OneNewsNow.com, you need to check that out. That's our news site, OneNewsNow.com. Don't depend on the liberal media for truth in news. Go to OneNewsNow.com. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning. Good to be with you. Mention One News Now. Our editor there, Jody Brown, just put up a story on the latest coming out of Charlotte. The headline, Rioters Ignore Facts, Alter the Narrative. And really want to, folks to read that story because it puts the broad picture in perspective of what's going on in Charlotte. And what's really going on there is that there is the truth, and then there is what's being spun out there in order to support a narrative. The narrative being by some that all cops are bad.
Right.
And that this is another incident in Charlotte. Despite the facts that we now know that the police officer who shot this man, the gentleman who was shot is 43-year-old Keith Lamont Scott. He was a black police officer.
Right.
And that the video that the police now have prove that despite what you may be hearing in social media out there, the man who was shot did not have a book in his lap. He had a gun. And this morning, as we speak right now, apparently the police chief has agreed to bring the family of Mr. Scott in to show the video. They're not releasing the video to the media right now. And I was just listening to a brief briefing by the police chief. They're not releasing it. There's a reason for it that the press are demanding it. But he says we can't because it's going to be used as evidence eventually in this case.
Right.
And if the feds get involved, which we know they will... that'll be part of the evidence, and you're tainting people's views if you release a
right.
lot of these videos. So, but they have invited the family. They do have the option, the police department, to invite the family in to show them what happened. Now, it's going to be interesting to see what happens next, whether that changes things when the family has seen the video. But one of our reporters, Steve Jordal, what he did last night, and we aired this on our newscast this morning, and now you have it in print on One News Now, is take a look at this whole aspect about people using comments on social media to create a reality that doesn't reflect reality at
yes.
all. And that's part of the agenda in all of this. So what I've done is brought along Steve Jordal's piece. It runs about a minute and a half or so for us to listen to, and then we can come back and discuss this a little bit more.
Not justice! Not peace!
Protesters blocked a freeway, hijacked a truck and set fire to its contents, demolished police cars and left 16 officers injured after police shot and killed an African-American suspect named Keith Lamont Scott on Tuesday night. This time, however, the police officer was also black. That fact was so inconvenient to the lawyers representing the Scott family that they just, well, changed it.
The black man got on TV because they switched it. It was a white man.
Everybody say switch it. Everybody say switch it back. Everybody say switch it back.
The narrative of race is so important to the protesters because without it, they have a hard time justifying the violence they were advocating.
We're not telling our brothers and sisters to stop. We're not going to get out there and tell y'all, oh, brother, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't do this. When we ain't getting no justice. So everybody in Charlotte should be on notice that black people today, we tired of this bull.
So, based on a lie, they trashed and looted a city, caused thousands of dollars of damage to their own neighborhoods, and injured 16 police officers. Gary Bauer of American Values says in a world that has no room for objective truth, people choose the narrative that aligns with their preconceptions.
It is striking how many people, because they see something online, assume that it's true, particularly if it reinforces a bias that they already have.
He notes the book of James says the tongue is a fire and sets the whole course of one's life on fire. In Charlotte, it turns out, literally. I'm Steve Jordal.
That's a great piece, by the way.
What you heard there was one of the leaders of the protesters saying, switch it back, switch it back. And what he was saying was the police department said the police officer who did the shooting was black. And what he's saying is, switch it back to what we told you originally, that the police officer was white.
You mean, so let me get this straight. They're actually, some of the protesters, and then we'll come back to this leader here, they actually believe the police are lying about
yes.
who shot
yes.
Scott?
Yes.
Wow. And this leader, when it's saying switch it back, they're saying switch it back to what it really yeah. was, which was...
Keep telling people it was a white police officer.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I don't know what to say about that.
Well, I'll tell you what to say. I know what you're saying, yeah. Ed. I know what you're saying about what you can't, don't know what to say. With a lot of these protesters and even some of these leaders of the Black they may not be Black Lives Matter officially, but they're
with the agenda.
They're with the agenda. Is, and like the some of the people you just heard right there is, facts do not matter. You cannot reason with these people. They don't care about what the truth is. All right, you heard them right there, and that's they don't change it back. So we've already got within 24, 48 hours, one of the black leaders there leaders who happens to be black. I don't know how you put it. I don't want to offend all black people by saying he didn't speak for me, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The Black Lives Matter type person, let me put it that way, saying that the cops have already changed this. In other words, it was really a white cop who shot this man, and the police are covering up and trying to say, no, it was a black man. So the black police officer, I guess, has been told, hey, you got to go with us on this. Take the fall.
Yeah, fall on your sword, because this guy has been suspended.
This is idiocy. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is idiocy, and it shouldn't be tolerated as someone who's trying to have a rational discussion. So at some point, when you have this kind of thing happen, you just have to say, you're not worthy of commenting anymore. We're not showing up at your press conferences anymore. We're not reporting what you say, because your message is without any truthfulness at all. You know what I'm saying?
But here's the more disturbing thing. These people are saying switch it back. They know what the truth is.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
We've seen this. We saw this in Ferguson. You know, what was shown there was the police officer was defending himself. Michael Brown.
No, but yes, but his partner, Michael Brown's partner, his friend who was with him that day, made up the story.
Yes.
You remember, this is how this all started.
Exactly.
He made up a story
within,
a few hours on camera.
Yeah.
And he said Michael had his hands up. Said he was shot in the back, didn't he?
Right.
Yeah.
Said he shot. So, and the autopsy even reported he was shot in the front.
Yeah.
So this kid, or was it really a young man, who's with Michael Brown? This is independent of whether there's police brutality or not in America somewhere.
In fact, it hurts that discussion.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
But let me make my point here. This young man makes up this story of hands up, don't shoot. It's a complete lie.
Even the Justice Department has said that.
Eric Holder's, Obama's Justice Department, said that was a lie. They sent like 40 or 50 FBI
40,
agents
yeah, 40.
To little Ferguson, Missouri, to try to nail Darren Wilson, the police officer, on civil rights violations. And they couldn't.
Yeah.
In other words, the whole thing was made up. Michael Brown reached in the car and got in a fight with the police officer trying to get his gun, and he got shot. And that was the facts of the story. So the whole Ferguson burns down, the world gets on fire, and everybody
creates Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter. All based on something that wasn't even true.
All based on a lie. And Ferguson is still suffering today.
Right.
Because the Justice Department came back and said, you're still bad people out there. We're going to fine you. they're about 30% short of the number of police officers that they need. They need another 13 police officers. They can't find anybody who wants to be a police officer.
Who wants to work there?
Ferguson. Under the thumb of the feds.
It's
still a mess.
Yeah.
So the whole community.
And President Obama, fed that.
He fed that. Exactly what happened.
The leader of the free world, the country, fed that. In fact, they invited Michael Brown's mom to Philadelphia for the Democrat National Convention. Now, you know, everybody has sympathy for a mother who loses a child.
Right.
That doesn't change the story. So what you've done here is you've invited Michael Brown's mother to the Democrat National Convention. You've given the story, which is a lie, credibility.
Yes.
The Democrat National Party did. Now, if you want to have somebody at the Democrat National Party talk about police interaction with the black community, that's fine. But don't bring up somebody to talk who is, in fact, I heard Michael Brown's mother talk in an interview. This was an interview with CNN or Fox News, Michael Brown's mother. And she said that Darren Wilson, the police officer there in Ferguson, got up that morning and wanted to kill somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Brown, her son, just happened to be the one that he killed. Think about what she's just saying right there. That's a crazy statement.
Mm-hmm.
And the reporter doesn't even challenge it.
Nope.
Because, well, she's a grieving mother or whatever. So if you can't even challenge that kind of statement, mm-hmm. and you can't even challenge that Black Lives, that hands up don't shoot didn't even happen,
mm-hmm.
then how do you have a rational conversation?
Well, you can't.
About an issue.
But
same thing in Charlotte. That's what happened in Charlotte.
What's happening in Charlotte, and you mentioned the media, they're all part of this too.
Right.
You know, they know what the truth is, but they're sticking with the narrative of the Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter is basically controlling the media.
I saw it this morning on the news. I saw and I don't remember, this might have been Fox News. I don't know if this has been, you know, on some of the other mainstream media sources, but I saw on the video, or Liz's still photo, I saw a gun lying on the street next to the body of the deceased, this Scott man.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the idea that he was carrying, maybe was carrying a book, I don't know, but he had a gun.
So how this all got inflamed, not that it wouldn't have been inflamed just by the mere fact that it happened, that is a policeman killed. Now, when they found out it was a black police officer, it kind of deflated the whole white cop after black youth. And the man was 40, wasn't he, or something like that? I'm talking about Scott.
Scott was 43 years
old.
He
wasn't a 15-year-old. But what happened was his daughter, correct me if I'm wrong, his daughter, mm-hmm. Mr. Scott's daughter, went on the internet with a video,
mm-hmm.
and she's crying and screaming that her dad's been killed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then she says he only had a book. He didn't have a gun. Am I still right?
That's one of the reports that I've heard. Yes.
I haven't watched the whole video. I watched enough of it.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering to myself at the time, who videotapes an hour when your dad's been killed of you? Anyway, I just thought that was kind of bizarre.
That you would think to do that.
But what happened was that went viral.
Mm-hmm.
That video of her went viral. And so if you believed what she was saying in that video, the daughter of this gentleman who was killed, then he was slain while he had a book, and the police officers are saying he had a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Cops lying about a gun, and he only had a book. He was just basically sitting there reading a book and got blown away,
mm-hmm.
by a police officer because, for whatever reason. So that's kind of inflamed everything.
That's how it all got started. But it keeps rolling, and I can't underemphasize the role of the media's coverage in this. I was looking at some video this morning of last night's riots, and the video was of a young woman who was one of the rioters who got sprayed. Pepper spray by the police.
Yeah.
Gas. And she was wiping her eyes, and she said, they did that to me and I wasn't doing anything at all. Well, if you got in line of that, you probably were on the front lines of the rioting last night. But the reporter in the interview never challenged her on that. Well, what were you doing out here? How did that happen?
Right.
But it all goes back to this whole issue of, here's the narrative. Police are bad. They target black people because they're black. So we have to stick to that story, regardless of the facts that are coming out. We're going to stick to that story. Because that goes to our agenda, Black Lives Matter agenda. It goes to that agenda. So truth doesn't matter anymore, which was the point that Steve Jordahl was making in his piece. Truth doesn't matter anymore. What we have to do is stick to our narrative.
Well, this is what Al Sharpton, this is how he got his start. He made up that Tawana Brawley rape.
Exactly.
Yeah. Tawana Brawley, for those who don't remember, this is back in the 80s, I think.
I think you're right. I think the 80s, way back.
Reverend Al Sharpton, if you don't remember the story, he became a national public figure because he was representing or speaking on behalf of a young black lady in New York City who claimed she was raped by a white man or white men.
I think it was a group.
It was gang raped, yeah. I think. Said she was, and so Al Sharpton's on there talking about this racism and all this. And as it turned out.
And he became famous because of that.
It became famous, and as it turned out. There was no truth to the story.
She later admitted that.
He has never apologized to this day for that.
And he's considered a credible source. He has his own show on MSNBC.
And he did it again with Duke University kid. Remember
the
those?
The cross players.
Same thing again.
Yeah. Well, in fact, to show you how liberal these professors are, a whole bunch of professors at Duke University signed a letter. Mm-hmm. Against the Duke lacrosse team and how reprehensible their behavior was, and they ought to be, because they accused them of raping this girl, this black girl who was
at a party or
at a party. Mm-hmm. And after the facts came out, after everybody had already pounced on these kids, these young men, the facts came out that that was not true, that did not happen. Mm-hmm. Once again,
In fact, it's so bad. I think some of those lacrosse players have wound up suing.
Oh, they did sue and they won.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But everybody, nobody takes a chill pill here and says, let's wait and see what happened. We don't even, this guy, you played the news clip a few minutes ago, is demanding things of the Charlotte police and the Charlotte mayor and everybody. We're going to boycott Charlotte and everything. 24 hours.
Yeah.
After this is
well. You want to if you want to become famous, you've got to get out in
Sharpton?
Front. You've got to get out in front of everybody else, and you've got to be the first one to the microphone. I think that's part of what's happened. I pointed out in an email I sent around, the Charlotte Observer, the newspaper of record there in Charlotte, said that protests initially were peaceful.
Yes.
And then that night they turned what they said was chaotic. I'm convinced that this Black Lives Matters group, which I think is funded at least in part by George Soros, who's well known
through a foundation. Now we had this story a couple of weeks ago through a foundation in San Francisco.
Right.
A 501c3 foundation is helping to fund the Black Lives Matter.
I think what they do is they bus people in to these areas mm-hmm. immediately to turn it
violent. Rent a protester?
Yes. I think that turn it violent. Now, that's not to say that there are not protesters locally, but
maybe I'm asking a question that has its own, that we all know the answer to, but what within a few hours of something happening like this, what are you protesting?
Well, it's the Black Lives Matter narrative about police and the black community.
Well, then, you know what? We don't really need an incident to happen to do that. Why don't they just say, listen, on Saturday night from 8 to midnight, we're going to set aside this section of town here over here for y'all to come, whoever feels like they need to protest, and just... You can burn things down or whatever you want to do, but we've reserved so you can express your anger.
Well, that's an excellent point. You know,
why not?
That's almost tongue-in-cheek because the fact of the matter is if the facts don't matter.
Right. If you don't need an incident.
Then why even wait for an incident?
Right. The report a while ago, the man wanted, we're not getting no justice here or something like that. What does that mean? We not getting any justice? We didn't even had barely had a booking at the, all right,
the police officer's been suspended as per department rules.
Right.
Suspended, awaiting
a black police
an investigation.
Officer again. I mean, black police chief.
They suspend any police officer who discharges his weapon and kills somebody. So, they're automatically suspended and you have an investigation.
Right. So you don't need, these people don't need an incident to happen to shout and get the people we're talking, the Black Lives Matter group. So I would suggest you know, cities consider having an area of the city set aside
I read this morning that one of the stores that's been looted was the Charlotte Hornets. You know, they have gear. You know, t-shirts and jerseys and stuff like that. So that was completely looted. So I'm sorry, I don't think that is really a part of your protest.
Those are thieves.
You're using it as an opportunity to bust out the windows and go take gear that maybe
like
is too
expensive.
Like
in Ferguson when they busted out and then took all the TVs and stuff.
Yeah. Right.
And that's what happened again. What does looting have to do?
It doesn't have anything to do with it. It's those people, I don't know that they even care about it. They're just wanted to take advantage.
Opportunists.
Wanted to take advantage of a situation of chaos and but anyway, you know, as we've said here before, what you got here is little boy that cries wolf. I'm talking about with the fair-minded people in the country. Like my wife said to me the other day, she said, "You know what? Time after time these things are based on lies. Things that never even happened." She said, "You show me a case of where a policeman went after somebody because they were of a color, black, or whatever," and she said, "I'll march with you."
Yeah,
and I'm Lily White. I'll march with you if that you show me. But you come a time and time. This is how I think a lot of people feel. But you come to the time and time and time again with made up stories about police officers and situations, and after a while you go, you know, this is, like I said, this is the little boy that cries wolf syndrome.
Yep.
And then these people suffer in downtown, the businesses suffer in downtown. Mm-hmm.
And I would guess that a lot of them might not ever come back because they go, well, why come back? So now all you're doing is depriving your community of places to shop.
Yeah.
Because these businesses get looted, they get burned down. Well, I'm going to move out to the suburbs.
Well, and imagine all the black people that are out of work because these businesses now are shut down. This is what happened in Ferguson.
Also, what's going to happen, guys, over time, and it may not take long, is that a lot of these areas that maybe are predominantly black are going to become more dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
The reason is police officers are not going to want to go in there.
No.
Because they don't want to come in conflict with a young black male, and then they have to end up confronting them or shooting them, and then their lives are ruined.
Well, Darren Wilson. You know.
Well, that's not speculation.
So it leaves the community more vulnerable.
Well, Baltimore. We saw this in Baltimore.
Right.
The police are saying, well, I'm not going to go over there. I'm not going to dare put my life in jeopardy.
Right.
Right.
Because I know the media will turn on me if I have to defend myself.
It doesn't matter
whether,
as you see with Darren Wilson, whether I'm justified or not in my behavior. It's just a mere fact that if I get into a confrontation with a young black male and things escalate, and then if you have criminals who know this, they can just taunt the cops if they want to.
Well, and then you have the additional complication. So does a police department say, okay, fine, we'll only send black officers into the dangerous areas? The black officers are going, I want to go home to my family tonight, too.
Right, I want to go to the mall.
Yeah.
Why do you send me to the hood?
Yeah.
You know, so but the Black Lives Matter and making up these stories that aren't true is damaging the cause that they say they represent with what I would call fair-minded people across the country who aren't in favor of police brutality, but they're also a law and order, and they don't want to see cops lied about and then then we see what happens in Charlotte.
Yeah.
All right, we'll be back after the news. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American.